Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer. We don't have a guest this week, except later on when we ask people to read. Gwyn and I are going to discuss the anthology we've been involved in for the Spirit of the Hills Writers Group. The first anthology was published in 2012, and this year we are releasing a second one, a larger one.
As many of you listeners will know, this program came about because of the Spirit of the Hills Writers Group, which meets in Grafton every month and includes writers, poets, publishers, playwrights, anybody to do with the writing world in Northumberland. And this program was a way to showcase that talent here. Now, another way that we do that is to produce an anthology every couple of years. And this month, we will be publishing Hill Spirits 2.
All the writers in our group, of which there are, I think, at the moment 35 who are regular members and attenders, were asked to submit stories or poems or nonfiction for the anthology. And we got a great collection of material. Also, in order to help us as editors to put the book together, we had a theme, and the theme is time, past, present, and future. So that gave a little structure to the book and also allowed us to put in the pieces that we felt illustrated that theme.
And putting an anthology together isn't just a matter of throwing the pieces in as they come in or in any higgledy-piggledy way. Having the theme helps us to structure not only where they are placed in the book, but also to be able to sort out which pieces complement each other so that you don't read one story and then go into a completely different genre and be jarred by it in the next story. Now, that's not to say that they all sound the same. They don't. We have a huge range of writers and a huge range of submissions. We have light-hearted, funny stories. We have very dark stories. We have poetry, true stories, persuasive article essays. It was quite a juggling act, but we have a very good team of editors.
Yes, indeed. And this year we had four editors. Erica Rummel, who is a novelist and is an editor of academic books. Susan Statham, who was an editor of the first volume with Gwyn and myself and has contributed her expertise to the second, and she's also an artist, which is a great help when it comes to choosing illustrations for the book.
Which is an unusual aspect, actually, of our anthology. Not many books these days are illustrated, but this one is. We have a number of illustrations, and all of them are original art from people right here in Northumberland. Some are photographs, some are pen and ink drawings, watercolor, and even an oil painting that illustrates one of the stories. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a compendium of talent from the region, for
Indeed.
Sure.
Indeed, yes.
So let's give you a taste of what's in the anthology. Let's start with a story first. And here's an excerpt from Peggy Diamond Levy's story, Night Song.
I wake before dawn to cooler air and the sound of far-off voices. Somewhere, a faint choir is singing, the sound rising and falling with the night breeze. Padding across the kitchen, I step out into the screened-in porch that extends across the back of the cabin. The sound is clearer here, the music vaguely familiar, something from my early church-going days. Gradually, the singing drifts away. Although I strain to hear it again, the only sound now is a light rain that patters on the leaves outside. I return to my bed, pull up the extra blanket I'd folded over the end. Since my arrival 2 nights ago, I've been surprised how easily I've fallen asleep in the silence of this place. My nearest neighbors, the Sawyers, live a good mile down the road. Could the voices have come from the other side of the bay? There is a small marina over there and a community of cottages. But who'd be holding choir practice at 4 in the morning? When I told my daughter Mara I was considering volunteering as a guide at the oldest church in the province, she was incredulous. Your first summer of retirement, Mom? Seriously? The board of directors of the historic site at Gull Bay had found no one willing to volunteer for the month of July and might not be able to open until August. At the last minute, and knowing next to nothing about what I was taking on, I said I'd do it. I was sure I'd find plenty of information online. I've been promised more reading material when I got there. You know I'm going to be worried sick about you, don't you? Nara nattered, all alone in that godforsaken place. But I won't be alone, dear. Your cousin Ryan is coming for part of the time. Steph and Roy have a chance to go on a cruise, and I said Ryan could come stay with me. A teenage boy, Mother? What are you thinking? Driving down on the weekend to take a look around, I find the trip takes longer than expected. I'm still on a gravel road an hour after driving off the ferry. But finally, in a break in the line of trees that crowds the edge of the road, there it is. A large, two-story box of weathered boards, a parking lot on one side, an area of new-mown grass on the other. A young man is unloading picnic tables from a truck with Parks Department emblazoned on the door. Doesn't open till next week. The parks man meets me as I start up the walk to the church. Just taking a look around, I say. Okay to peek in the windows? Sure, but the custodian's away till Monday. What about the cabin, the living quarters? The young man removes a key from a ring on his belt. If you don't take too long, go ahead and have a look at it. I'll let you know when I've finished anchoring down these tables. I stride across the grass to the small yellow cabin in the trees. Sunlight glints on water to my right, and I hear the splash of waves against the door. An old rowboat has been pulled up into the bushes there and tied to a tree. 3 days later, I officially move in. I stop by the custodian's house to pick up the keys, and Mr. Sawyer expresses surprise that I am alone. They usually want a couple for this, you know. Job 6 days a week, only Mondays off to get to town. No problem, I assure him. My 14-year-old nephew will be joining me. By the time my sister Steph drops Ryan off on Wednesday afternoon, I'm feeling quite at home. I think having you here is going to work out really well, Ryan, I chirp. The boy casts a critical eye at his new surroundings. You and I are going to be partners. If I need to come over to the cabin or to pop into town, you'll be here to keep an eye on things. Steph shifts from one foot to another, anxious to be on her way. Come on, Ryan, I say. I'll show you where you'll be sleeping. That night, for the second time, I hear the distant choir of voices. For a moment I forget I am no longer alone, and that Ryan might be hearing it too. There is a tap on the bedroom door. Aunt Care, do you hear that? I roll out of bed. Ryan is standing in the moonlit kitchen. Can you hear it? I heard it the other night, too. Together we step out into the porch. So where's it coming from? I've no idea, but I'm going to ask Mr. Sawyer the next time I see him. Slowly the music begins to fade. It's stopped. Ryan shakes out his sleeping bag, preparing to climb back inside. Sounds carry a long way on the water, he says with authority. Could be coming from anywhere, you know. Likely someone with their TV on too loud. But it isn't anyone's TV. It's the same familiar hymn I heard the first time. I wish I could dismiss it as easily as Ryan. I lie awake till the sun comes up.
Ooh, and then what happens?
Thank you very much, Peggy.
Oh, you're welcome.
The book has a number of poems in it, really quite a collection, and quite a range of poets who write in different styles. Next, we're going to hear Katie Hoogendam read a poem called My Mother's Raspberry Patch.
My Mother's Raspberry Patch. In my mother's raspberry patch, I learned that if you want fruit from the stalk, you have to endure blood on your hands. To be patient with resistance, fruit to flesh. To be at once violent and gentle, the allegiance of skin to root. Only when your hands are red with guilt, I learned, can you return home. There your work will be washed and boiled and canned, transfigured into jam, adulterated beyond recognition in the kitchen. The patch, the blood, the clinging, just a memory, now forgotten.
Thank you, Katie. Now here's a different poem. It's called My Father's Teeth, and the poet is Richard Grove.
But unfortunately, Ty is not able to be with us, so I'm going to read Ty's poem for him. My Father's Teeth. A ponderous occasion has befallen me on a cool spring Sunday visit with Mother. Boxes of Father's books were unpacked, some for my sisters, some for my brothers. Not that we need more books, or even have space for them, but inscribed, gently, with pencil, date, his name, sometimes an occasion, Christmas 1999 from Christopher, increases their sentimental value. Where will they stand proud when I get them home? I will find space, no worries. Artifacts of this rank will not be thrown out. Father's top dresser drawer, untouched for months, a record of his last years. Why did he have 22 handkerchiefs? Some worn thin, almost all blue with white dots, 4 shoehorns, a couple of old pocket knives, maybe from his youth. I will offer them to his grandsons. I inherited a half-used bar of soap, bone dry, rattling inside a small rubber travel container, too old to say made in China on the bottom. The soap, 2 thin green bars bonded together, a black whisker jutting from between his from the last trip with Mother to France 25 years ago, a well-deserved retirement trip. I inherited 3 pairs of suspenders, 2 broken, all 3 now in the garbage with broken belts that fit neither him nor me. Another belt with a fancy L.L. Bean solid brass sliding buckle, a bit too small for me, will hang in the dark recesses of my closet with my other belts, that will never be worn by me, reminding me of a thinner time. 1 pearl white tic-tac mint left to jangle in its plastic container. My mouth now minty fresh. His half-used deodorant I will use. His bristle-flattened toothbrush I threw away. In the box, a plastic container revealed 2 sets of dentures. 2 upper, 2 lower. Why on earth? I cannot bear to toss his alabaster choppers into the bin. I think I will trek them to the woods, inter them under a log. No better place for my nature-loving father's smile to rest. My little sister laughed when I told her, imagining a dog scampering home with father's grin. So that was the poem My Father's Teeth by Richard Grove. And now we'll take a short break.